Greetings, welcome to another Hempisode of Hempaware Radio. This is your host, Tyler Hemp, here to empower your hemposphere. And today we have a very special guest joining us, Eric Herlock of Lancaster Farming. Eric is a distinguished writer and podcaster at Lancaster Farming, where he focuses on this fascinating world of hemp. And with his deep knowledge and passion for the industry, Eric has become a pivotal voice, shedding light on the myriad uses, benefits, and industry updates news surrounding hemp. He's here to share his insights and experience with us, having interviewed dozens and dozens of hemp experts and companies over the last several years. So I'm excited to dive into the topic of hemp education, hemp podcasting, and the latest in hemp news. So stay tuned and let's dive into this fascinating conversation. But before we get started, remember, this hempisode is brought to you by hempaware.com, your go-to source for hemp marketing, branding, and education so that you can grow your hemp business and attract the ideal customers so that we can all experience this paradigm shift that we're destined to through the powerful integration of hemp into our lives and businesses. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome aboard Eric Herlock of Lancaster Farming. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Hi, Tyler. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's an honor. Thank you for that very warm introduction. I wasn't sure you were talking about me, but yeah, that was great. Thank you for all of that. Happy to be here.
Yeah, you're such a great writer. You really cover important topics, topics that I feel are maybe more important than the whole cannabinoid side of things. The majority of the news that's covered about hemp is CBD this and THC and CBG that. And so I love that you're covering a lot of the farming aspects of things, the building industry, and a lot of other really important topics related to hemp, which we'll dive into here momentarily. But I'd love for you to share a little bit about your background in terms of your expertise, your professional background, and then sort of what led you up to becoming such a prolific writer on the topic of hemp for Lancaster Farming.
It's a tough question because I'm one of those people that's had sort of a meandering path through adulthood. You know, I say things like, you know, my career has really just been a loosely related series of odd jobs. But over the past 15 years or so, I've kind of focused in on media. And I was at Organic Gardening Magazine for a few years as their digital editor, and then moved over to Lancaster Farming, also as their digital editor. And I've been with Lancaster Farming over 9 years now. So professionally, yeah, I've sort of been in publishing. I've been in, you know, technology, digital stuff. I've been a writer most of my life. I remember there was a day in 1987 where I was like, I'm going to be a writer. And I just started writing. I continue, that's sort of part of my practice now, I write. I'm fortunate that I get to do some of that for my job. There's a lot about my job that I'm absolutely grateful for. I never really saw this hemp podcast coming my way, right? It's just, I had an idea and I work for a company that's very supportive and they saw the value in my idea and they believed in me. And yeah, I started putting this show out in August of 2018. So almost 6 years. And yeah, as you said in the intro, I've interviewed lots and lots of people. It's been great to sort of have a front row seat as the industry develops. And also, like you said, I'm less focused on cannabinoids and more focused on the industrial applications because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love cannabinoids. They just don't need my help. They have all the help that they need. They're doing a fine job. You know, everybody knows what THC is and what it does and CBD, and maybe not everybody does, but there's a lot of activity there. The way I see hemp as it relates to, you know, the whole cannabis plant is that there's so much potential on the industrial hemp side, right? And we'll get into more of this in a bit, but it's like my work is important because this plant has so much potential. And you also mentioned the paradigm shift, the potential for this plant to help us get to that new paradigm, which we have to get to if we're going to survive the 21st century. All right, I'll just leave it there. Hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah. So you have had a background of publishing and writing and odd jobs. And as of recent, you've mainly focused on the media side of things, being the digital editor for Organic Gardening Mag, and then coming over to Lancaster Farming. So prior to you joining Lancaster Farming, they didn't have anything related to hemp. You kind of brought this idea like, hey, I want to cover this topic. And they said, okay, go for it.
Well, yeah, sort of. I mean, there was obviously no hemp in farming, you know, for the past 80 years or so up until 2014. So when the 2014 Farm Bill was signed into law, that opened up those research permits in various states. So I started at Lancaster Farming in 2015, and there you would see an occasional story about hemp, you know, oh, this state has gotten their research pilot program together. But it was when I went to a 2017 field day at the Rodale Institute in Berks County, Pennsylvania. If you don't know the Rodale Institute, look them up. They're doing great work, sort of comparing organic agriculture to conventional agriculture. Fascinating place. A lot of great people there. I went to a field day in 2017, and they were one of the first permit holders in Pennsylvania. They had 4 acres of just, you know, thick fiber hemp. You know, nobody here knew what it was. You know, it wasn't a lot of talk about genetics or what you were growing for at that point. It was like, hey, here's a crop we haven't grown in a long time. Let's throw it in the ground and see what happens. So I went there as a reporter that day to cover the event, and I saw this field, you know, the stand of hemp, and I was struck by it. I had read Jack Herer's book, Emperor Wears No Clothes. Oh, like way before that. I think I read that in the early 90s as a college dropout living on the streets of Colorado out in Boulder, but that's a whole different story. So that was in there, right? That was in my brain that you can use hemp to make everything. And, you know, just growing up I was born in the 70s. So growing up through the 80s and 90s, you see the climate crisis, you see all of this plastic consumption. And it's just like all of these problems, but then here comes hemp. It's like legalized kind of at the right time to come riding in and hopefully save us. It's almost like a redemption story. Here's this plant that was vilified so long ago, but nope, it's going to help us.
Yes. And that's fascinating to learn that you read Jack Herer's book way back in the 90s. So that you always had this sort of seed in your consciousness about the potential hemp had to be this godsend, this phoenix rising from the ashes kind of thing.
Right, right. And what you asked me about was like the support from the newspaper, right? So once I brought them this idea of like, hey, let's do a podcast about hemp. I know I skipped a couple of points in my story there, but I brought them this idea and they were like, okay, go for it. And my editor, Steve Sieber, very supportive. I owe him just so much for believing me to do this, because they went out on a limb like, sure, let's have the digital editor guy, the guy who runs our websites, let's have him make a podcast, right? And I started talking to people because I realized there was really very little information for farmers in media at the time, especially for farmers growing hemp, you know, like wasn't a lot out there. So I thought, oh, I should talk to the farm manager at the Rodale Institute. I should talk to the Secretary of Agriculture of Pennsylvania. I just started going around talking to people and publishing those conversations so people could learn from it.
That's so essential. Education is, I think, the foundation of the success of any industry, but especially with all the demonization and misinformation surrounding hemp, we need more people like you doing what you're doing. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. So we are a farming newspaper, Lancaster Farming. We go out to 70,000 farm families in the Northeast. You know, if you're a dairy farmer here in Pennsylvania, there's a really good chance that you get Lancaster Farming every Saturday. And it's this big, thick, fat newspaper. It's got stories for farmers. It's got, you know, information. It's got things from Penn State Extension educators talking about what you need to be doing in your fields right now. It's just like a big source of information. Plus, it's got like classified ads and recipes. And it's just like the world of farming in a newspaper. And our readers love it. And so what I've been doing every week is I have a promo in there for the podcast. And I don't mean to be like subversive in this, but I feel like part of what I'm doing is normalizing the growing of industrial hemp, normalizing it in the sort of in the minds of farmers, right? Because yeah. these are the people who are going to be growing fiber and grain. And there was a big, you know, 2019, the floodgates opened, CBD, Green Rush, all of that stuff. And I know for a fact that a lot of our readers like are sick of that, and they got burned, or they know somebody who got burned in the CBD craze, the boom and the bust. So I make it a point to be like, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about farming. I'm talking about row crops. I'm talking about, you know, getting industrial hemp in your rotations with your corn and your soy, because to get to scale in order to meet what I think is going to be a huge demand for all of these sustainable products, building materials, clothing, bioplastics, all of that, we need to get to scale. We need to get there soon. So that's kind of like the other part of my mission, is to just slowly normalize the crop in the minds of the people who are going to be growing it. And so I think that's an important part of my mission that I don't really talk about much, but it's true, because we need, like, the farmers are the people who are going to grow it. It just,
yeah,
it's not like, oh, I love marijuana, so I'm going to get a license to grow CBD and I'm going to, you know, it's like there was a lot of that happening when the farm bill was signed. Like a lot mm-hmm. of people were like, oh, hemp is a gateway crop for farmers, because look at all, it brought in all of these new farmers. Mm. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And no, I think the CBD boom and bust was good in a lot of ways, but, you know, had some negative consequences.
Most certainly. What would you say are some of the biggest challenges or resistance that you get from farmers when you talk to them about hemp? Are they generally open-minded and familiar with it, or is there still a lot of confusion? Like, what's the general consensus about the idea of putting hemp in their field?
Well, you know, obviously it's a sort of a spectrum, but for the most part, I think farmers are fine with it. It's like, oh, it's another crop. Can I make money from it? Is there a market? That's all they're going to care about. You know, do I have the equipment to grow it? Do I have the equipment to harvest it? Is there a market? That's really what it comes down to. But the problem for farmers is when you tell them that they need to go get a license, and then they have to go down to the courthouse and get fingerprinted and get an FBI background check, right? And then you're going to have the government show up on your farm like 30 days before harvest to test your crops to make sure they don't have THC in them. And if they do, if they have too much, you have to remediate or destroy the crop. So it's just like they set up this system that, I don't know, like no farmer that I know would want to go through any of those hoops, right? And God bless mm-hmm. the ones who do, because they see the vision, right? They know that this is important. They know that if you're an early adopter, it's you know, somebody's got to learn how to do this. But not all farmers are going to be that, you know, open to it. So mm-hmm. the biggest problem now are those requirements. And there's something happening now. I think you're going to see it in the new farm bill. There's draft language in both the House and the Senate version of it that is pretty much the 2023 Industrial Hemp Act, also known as the Exemption Act, that essentially creates a sub-definition of industrial hemp, splitting it from cannabinoid hemp, right? Because what that's going to do is get rid of the licensing. It's going to get rid of the testing. It's going to get rid of the background checks. It's going to get rid of the things that are keeping farmers from growing it.
So yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And the people who are making this happen, you know, it's
Agricultural Hemp Solutions.
Bingo. Yeah. Courtney.
Yeah. Courtney Moran.
Courtney Moran. She is amazing. Obviously, she's working with a lot of people to get this done. But yeah, she's fantastic.
Absolutely. So being that you've been aware of hemp all these years, and getting into more of the media side of things in 2018, what would you say has been some of the most surprising things that you've learned about hemp since you began your journey? I mean, from reading Jack Herer's book all the way up till now interviewing all of these different hemp entrepreneurs, what are some of the most surprising and interesting things you've learned?
Well, right out of the gate, one of the most surprising things I learned, and surprisingly, it's not about industrial, it's about cannabinoid hemp. Learning about the endocannabinoid system that we have in our bodies was kind of mind-blowing, right? It's like, oh, this plant like works in our system to promote what, equilibrium. Like, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but it's fascinating that we have this system in there that, you know, it to me, it's sort of proof that we've been intertwined with this plant for a very, very, very long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was surprising. Just also surprised by the amount of things that you can do with the plant. For me, the housing part of it is amazing. Like I have this vision, you know, where we can grow our houses in the mm-hmm. field, grow the hemp, process it local, and just start rebuilding rural small towns and, you know, these houses that are poorly insulated. You know, just like there's so much you can do on the building side. So that was a surprise. I was just I'm continually surprised by the people in the space and the passion and creativity that they bring to what they're doing.
Mm.
Right. So that's what blows my mind too. And surprises me like, oh, you build a car out of hemp, right? Like Bruce Dietzen down in Florida, like, yeah, you build a car out of hemp. So just like the things that people are doing, it's full of surprises.
I agree. Yeah. And to your point about the endocannabinoid system, how cool is it that this plant, the number one plant that was probably more demonized than any plant in the world, has a name, a compound within our bodies or a system within our bodies named after the plant. It's like we knew about cannabis and then we discovered what cannabinoids were. And then, you know, the word cannabinoid is actually a conjugation of canna, which comes from cannabis, and then binoid or cannabin, I guess, is cannabis. And oid is a Greek origin. It comes from the word eidos, which means wisdom. And so I love, like you said, it's this wisdom molecule that informs the different elements of our body, the different systems within our body to create that equilibrium. So I like to think of cannabinoids as wisdom molecules.
I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah.
And then, cool. Of course, housing, that to me too is like the foundational thing. Like when I discovered hemp when I was a young teenager and I saw that you could create homes out of this and food, like I was like, food, shelter, clothing, like hello.
There it is, right there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what that does is it allows us to solve the basic fundamental human needs so that we have the opportunity to expand into higher consciousness and really fully live out our true potential as human beings. And I really believe hemp is our vehicle to do that. So, and then I agree too about the people, their passion, the creativity surrounding this plant. It's just such amazing people with beautiful visions. And so that is one of the funnest parts of this industry and market, the people involved.
Yeah, I've been really lucky to get to know these people and spend time with them. I've been out to Montana a handful of times. I've gotten to know the Elliots, the family that owns and operates IND Hemp. I've gotten to know, you know, Greg Wilson at Hempwood and Cameron McIntosh here in Pennsylvania at Amerishon, like a hempcrete builder. And I love these people. They're so inspiring to me. I'm an optimist and it's taken me a while to get to optimism throughout the course of my life, but I'm a determinant optimist. And that's like, I believe that we are headed toward a very specific thing and I'm excited. And the people whose stories that I'm telling through the podcast, these are the people who are building the future that I am determinately optimistic about. I love it.
Yeah. You're doing a great job supporting these people. So as a writer and a podcaster for Lancaster Farming, how do you see the role of media having these conversations, covering these topics? What do you see the role of media in shaping the overall public perception of hemp?
Yeah, it could play a really big role and it should, but you know, I think our media system in America is broken, you know, like for-profit media, you know, like looking at cable TV and all of the 24-hour news, like they have the wrong thing in mind. You know, that's a greed-driven system. But like in an ideal world, media could be helping to tell the story of this plant, right? And that's what I'm doing, but we're a niche publication, right? I'm a small mm-hmm. podcast. I'm not reaching millions and millions of listeners, however much I would like to be. But I think the media will play a role in, choosing my words carefully here, It's like as some of the older folks leave the industry and newer people move into it, maybe you'll start to see a shift in what's covered. Because like I don't see a lot of, well, granted, I don't watch a lot of TV, but I don't see a lot of coverage of positive ways of addressing climate crisis. It's like the stories are so short. The news cycle is so short that, but what I'm talking about on this podcast is long-term, right? Like I'm talking about things that aren't really going to happen for another 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. And the way the cycles are now in media, it's like we don't have attention span for that. So I'm just slow and steady hanging in there. But there's so many great stories to tell, like the people we mentioned, like these great inspiring stories. But I was talking to someone earlier and, you know, I talk about hemp so much that I forget that other people don't know what I know about it. And so when I sort of get on my little soapbox, a little TED Talk thing, I then apologize. And no, but the person was like, wait, I don't know about any of this. Keep telling me, like, this is fascinating. It's great when, because I think young people, especially, like they're concerned about climate, they're concerned about economics, they're concerned about their health. Wait till they get a load of hemp, right? You know, like it's just waiting for consumers to demand that we start making all of our stuff from plants. And I'm waiting, and I'm trying my best to do what I can, right? Because I'm just one guy. I kind of feel like Forrest Gump. I kind of like wandered into this fascinating thing.
Slow and steady wins the race for sure. And even though you're one outlet, a niche publication, I think that it's those little seeds that are planted and you getting these stories out there that are going to inspire other entrepreneurs, other farmers to at least consider this as an option. And so it's people like us, I think they're going to make it happen. We can't depend on the major media outlets to get the truth out about this plant,
right,
and in a timely manner.
2 weeks from today, I'm actually going to Prague as part of a USDA delegation to the European Industrial Hemp Association conference. And this is kind of like sort of a testament to the work that I'm doing, is that I was invited to go on this from the National Industrial Hemp Council. They are tied in with the USDA and they're taking a delegation of American businesses over. So I was invited to sort of be embedded in that. And that's an honor because big media news agencies aren't sending people there. So I like, this is a special thing that I get to do and I am absolutely grateful for it. And I'm just curious who I'm going to meet and what I'm going to see.
Yeah, that's exciting. So are you sort of leading the delegation to show them or introduce them to hemp, or you're part of it?
No, I'm part of it. So it's led by Patrick Atagi from the National Industrial Hemp Council. He's sort of assembled a group of business people from the U.S. You know, there's folks from IND Hemp, Hempwood, a few other companies. So the idea is to promote American hemp over in Europe. So a group of hemp companies going over. And while Lancaster Farming isn't a hemp company, it's just neat to be included there because,
like you can document the entire experience and share that with us here in the U.S.
Yeah.
Cool. So being that you've talked to probably hundreds of hemp companies, hemp farmers, hemp businesses, hemp entrepreneurs on dozens of different topics, what have you found to be some of the most common misconceptions about hemp that you encounter with non-hemp people?
Well, there's the big dumb ones like, oh, is that a hemp shirt? Can I smoke it? You know, like, I talk to people who, and I never, like, I'm always caught off guard by the hemp jokes, like, oh, can you smoke it? Like, because I've forgotten, like, that's even a thing, right? I just like, no, we're serious here. We're talking about hemp. We're going to make stuff. We're changing the world here. Enough with your pot jokes. So, like, that kind of stuff. And also, like, on the other side of that is, like, hemp can do everything. Hemp is going to save us. It's all hemp. And it's like, wait a minute. It's not that easy, right? Hemp to me is sort of a symbol of what agriculture can do, because agriculture is about to be called upon to do more than just feed us and clothe us. It's going to be pulling carbon out of our skies. Farmers have an even more important role now.
Cool. So yeah, I agree. Yeah. Hemp is really a symbol. Symbol for the farmers, symbol of abundance, symbol of possibility. And I agree, a lot of people in the hemp industry claim, oh, hemp can do it all. But like you said, there's still limitations. You can't make steel with hemp. You can't make water with hemp. You can't make glass with hemp per se. So there's still major limitations, and it's not going to solve every problem in the world, but it can Right. solve some major ones.
Yeah. And a lot of the sort of technology they're figuring out now, it's like they can still do these same processes, but it doesn't have to be hemp, right? Like you can like pull out cellulose and lignins and do, you know, biocomposite plastics with many different things, just that hemp does so many different things and does it well. So I think that's why the argument is hemp.
Yeah, it's true. It is a miracle plant. There's no doubt about that, but it's not going to solve every problem in the world. So to kind of shift gears and get deeper into some of the industry insights with regard to hemp, how has the hemp industry evolved over past several years that you've been covering this topic? And what sort of trends do you see shaping the future of hemp?
Yeah. So when I wandered into this hemp industry in 2018, at that time, I was clueless. I didn't know what the industry was. I didn't know about CBD. There's a lot I didn't know. But there was a lot of people who had been in that space for a long time who did know, and they were building this thing. So I'm a latecomer to it. You know, there's people who've been in there a long time. For me, that the first full year of covering the hemp industry on the podcast was 2019, and that was the big CBD boom, right? So everybody was growing hemp. The acres were skyrocketing, and it was crazy. It was a lot of fun on the show because people would call me up like, "Hey, I'm doing this thing," and I would interview people, and you know, I talked to a guy who, what's his name? He won the Tour de France one year. He was involved, Floyd, what's his name? He's from Lancaster. So just, it was a lot of excitement that first year. I'm way off topic on your question. But
not
so that
really.
first year was 2019, and it was crazy. It was just like a free-for-all. We had a summit that year. We helped have the 2019 Pennsylvania Hemp Summit, and they let Lancaster Farming host the reception, and I'm like, all right, cool, let's get a band. And I put the band together and I did a live podcast from the show, and it was just like somewhat of a party atmosphere because there was a lot of money washing around. Like I got sponsorship to pay the band. And so that first year was crazy, but then 2020, COVID, the bust, all of that stuff. And the whole time I was looking at the CBD stuff going like, ooh, this isn't what I want to talk about. I want to make things. I want to sequester carbon. And then like the food aspect too. Like, so, all right, 2020, 2021, the conversation started to shift, at least from my coverage, into, food and industrial stuff. And the hemp feed issue is fascinating. And that's coming along too. So what you're seeing now, 2024, the new farm bill is going to split the two sort of sides of the hemp industry. I think you're going to see more people getting into the fiber and grain. We're going to see a lot more processing pop up. You know, IND Hemp for a while was the big one out there in Montana, but now Panda Biotech down in Wichita Falls, Texas, that's like really big. So there's processing coming up. It seems there's little pockets around regions around the U.S. where people are really focusing on it. Like here in Pennsylvania, we don't have any processing yet, but there's a lot of people working on it. We've got the Pennsylvania Hemp Engine, which is this group that got money from the National Science Foundation to jumpstart an economic engine. There's just some really neat things happening all over the place. You know, like you poke something with a stick and you'll find somebody cool doing some hemp stuff and textiles, you know, building materials, bioplastics. It's all of it. It's I get pretty excited about it.
Totally. So it started out when you got into it, when 2018 Farm Bill and the whole CBD boom, all this money pouring in, farmers putting a bunch of plants in the ground to grow CBD. And then it sort of exploded and a bunch of people made money. And then all of a sudden COVID hits and there's just this oversaturation of cannabinoids. And you're looking at this going, Maybe I'm going to shift gears and start focusing on the grain and the fiber side of things, because we can make stuff. We can actually build houses and have a much more innovative approach than just this whole cannabinoid side of things.
Yeah, well, from the get-go, I was interested in those things. You know, like one of the first podcasts I did was with a material scientist at Ford Motor Company.
Mm.
I want to say her name was like Debbie Walewski or something like that. And so I've always been interested in the industrial applications and what you can make from it. So when the CBD stuff happened, yeah, it caught me off guard, but people were interested in it. So, you know, I put out an episode about terpenes and, like, you know, how to harvest CBD hemp and trying to give the audience what they wanted, right? But then as that sort of faded away, because yeah, the 2020 with COVID, there was a lot of people who grew hemp in 2019 that were left holding the bag, right? And not a lot of people made money in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And a small handful of people. And there's, like, you can pinpoint to sort of things that happened along the way that led to that. You know, like, I've talked to people who are like, oh yeah, I wrote this paper that sort of outlined how you could make $50,000 an acre from CBD. And, you know, and like that sort of got out in there and everyone was just flooded, you know, like dollar signs in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always kind of maintained that connection to the industrial stuff. And cool. I was just very thankful when sort of CBD kind of like blew up. I'm not thankful that the Delta 8 situation went the way it did. That is kind of heartbreaking, because for years and years and years, the hemp advocates were telling everybody, politicians, lawmakers, everybody, like, we're not in this to get high. This is like, we want to make stuff out of the plant, right? And like, you can smoke a 10-foot joint of hemp and you'll just get a headache. And like all of these things that the advocates had been saying years and years and years were just completely undermined, like instantly with Delta 8 and Delta 10 and THCO and all these, I like the term red state weed. Bob Hoban calls it that. Yeah, but whatever. We're not here to talk about that.
Yeah, one bad apple can spoil the pop. But I think this new 2023 farm bill, the exemption bill, is going to be instrumental in opening the doors up for the grain and fiber market once again. So there's still hope for that.
Yeah, and I think this is a good sign. They did a great job. You know, they got sponsors in Senate and the House, and they approached it in a very, very intelligent way. I say they, like Courtney Moran and the whole crew, National Hemp Association, very much involved in that as well. So yeah.
Definitely. So to go a little bit deeper into the sustainability aspects and hemp being this innovative solution for carbon sequestering and minimizing plastics and all of these things, what would you say are some of the other major benefits that you have discovered that we could discuss in terms of environmental advantages and maybe personal health?
Sure. The thing that jumps out is regenerative farming, right? So we can grow this industry to scale without having to go down the road of other big ag. You know, we don't need Roundup Ready hemp. You know, we don't need genetically modified hemp. We've got a farmer here in Pennsylvania, Steve Groff, who is cover crop coach. He's been a pioneer in regenerative ag practices. And just yesterday he posted something on LinkedIn. It's like, here is hemp seedlings coming up through his cover crops. And so, like, that's fascinating to me, how we can, you know, not do things the way things had been done, right? To take this new crop as a clean break from old dirty systems. So that's exciting. And that will have health benefits, you know, like if you're not dumping chemicals into the land, it's not seeping into the water, it's not getting into your food, it's not getting into your body. So there's one aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. So obviously, maybe not obviously, but I've been a non-GMO, organic, sustainable, wild, heirloom type guy my entire adult life. But what's so bad about GMOs? Like, why should we avoid them?
I don't have a great answer for you. I'm not a chemist or even a farmer, but it just seems like if you are genetically modifying corn so that it won't get poisoned by the poison that poisons everything else, I don't know. It just seems weird, right? It just seems like that's taken it a little too far. I'm a simpleton, and I think things can be just fine if we keep them simple. And I know there's arguments on either side. GMOs are fine. GMOs are not fine. I don't have enough information about it. I know that I generally just try to eat as clean as possible, try to eat as local as possible. You know, I know my farmers, we have a CSA. I know where the meat comes from. You know, I am very grateful for where I live in Pennsylvania because I have access to these things. Not everyone else does. But anyway,
and you mentioned regenerative farming, like, and you mentioned cover crops. Can you tell us like a little bit more about the definition of regenerative farming and what are some of the practices involved in that?
So basically it's about building the soil. So if you look at nature, nature is regenerative, right? You look at a forest and it sort of has its equilibrium. It has its balance. But when you get into like monocropping agriculture, where you've just got the same crop and you got to, you know, put in the inputs and make sure it gets all the nitrogen and whatever, your soil is going to like die because there's so much life in the soil. I forget what the numbers are, but you look at like a square inch of soil and there's like 14 billion little organisms in there and they're all working together. And when, you know, there are things that we can do as farmers to like make the soil happy, right? And one of those things is like reduced tillage, right? So if you just keep plants growing on top of it, a cover crop throughout the year, your soil microbes are going to be happier. Your plants that you plant in there are going to do better because they'll have better access to nutrients and, you know, water and all sorts of things because the soil will be healthy. So that's, to me, like that's basically what regenerative agriculture is improving it. And so it regenerates. You don't need to keep dumping stuff into it.
So just overall improving the ecology of the soil, having it be more symbiotic and like a balanced and in harmony with nature.
Yeah. Well, look at, take plowing for instance, right? Like, oh, it's springtime. You're going to go plow the field and you're going to see all that loose dirt. And it kind of looks nice. You know, like I drive through Lancaster County and it's, they're out there plowing their fields with their horses and it's amazing. But then you think about it though, like, oh, our soil is where the carbon is. And when you break up the soil, what happens?
The carbon releases
the carbon. So if you're growing things and you're like, I'm regenerative and you're growing hemp and you're sequestering the carbon, but then you plow your field, you just lost all your carbon. Right. So like there's reasons that we should be keeping the soil covered. I mentioned Steve Groff. He's got a big, beautiful farm in southern Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, that he hasn't plowed in over 30 years.
Wow.
Which is incredible. Right. There was one time last spring where we had just gotten rain for 3 or 4 days. And he's like, Eric, I just drove my truck into the field. Right. And like, you couldn't do that on a conventional farm with tillage, right? Cause your truck would just like go into the mud because your soil is just, yeah. So regenerative agriculture.
I love it. I appreciate that. So most of our listeners are hemp business owners, hemp entrepreneurs, and or educators, advocates, people that are really wanting to get the word out about hemp. But let's say some people are new to this concept of industrial hemp and using it for all these applications. What advice would you give to someone who's looking to get into this industry, whether they're a farmer, or an entrepreneur, or an advocate?
Yeah. Well, if I was a farmer looking to get into it, I would start talking to other farmers. I would talk to some of the associations. I would like join the National Hemp Association, sort of tap into the network of people who are already doing this. I would also recommend that you start small. That was the advice that people were giving out in 2019. Like, yeah, only grow a little bit. Nobody listened, right? But it's good advice. Like it's a new crop. It's not rocket science, but there's some nuance to it. So start small. Don't think you're going to like, oh, I'm going to put 50 acres in now. Have you ever grown it before? No. I'm like, good luck. So start small, talk to people, talk to your neighbors, talk to your, other farmers. So farmers, and then people who want to get into maybe a hemp business. Yeah. Same sort of thing. Just talk to people, see what's out there. Educate yourself as much as you can.
Would you recommend any particular resources or communities for hemp entrepreneurs? I know you mentioned the National Hemp Association. Are there other organizations that you would recommend, or books or other resources?
Yeah, a lot of great organizations. It seems like every state has some kind of association. You know, like South Dakota has the South Dakota Hemp Association. There's the Illinois Hemp Growers Association. Like every state, you'll find some like really passionate, smart, motivated person who, you know, who's a visionary, and they organized already. And so there's a good chance that somebody in your state or your area has something going already. So do a Google search, find them, and just ask questions. And I found that hemp people in general are very receptive, right? They want you to learn. They want success. That's the other thing. Like in the space, as I'm covering it, it's like you could imagine it could be very competitive and cutthroat and all that, but it's not. Like there's a really passionate group of people in the hemp industry who know that there's so much potential and there's so much of the pie available that it's better to work together now than to compete against each other. So
yeah, that's nice. We call it co-opetition.
Yeah. Right.
Like it's a healthy level of competition, but knowing that there's going to be overlap, there's going to be the opportunity to share in this market that, like you said, there's so much potential and so many niches and so many avenues to generate revenue that working together is really going to be the best way to grow this industry and grow our own businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then maybe advice for advocates. Yeah. Just learn as much as you can and keep talking to people and, try not to make pot jokes. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, if there was like some resources, do you like for all three of these groups, farmers, advocates, and hemp entrepreneurs, what do you think is kind of missing in the industry right now that could help them succeed and help the plant succeed?
Money. Capital investment in infrastructure. That's what we need. We need government money. We need private money. We need to come together and build the infrastructure. I think about, like these super wealthy, rich people like Jeff Bezos. He could do a lot from, just a policy decision at his desk. He could say, by 2027, 15% of all of our shipping boxes have to be, non-tree cardboard, right? Like, or something like that. We're just at a policy level, at a big thing that could jumpstart things. I don't know. So I don't know, the people, and I talked about this a lot during the CBD boom. It's like the people who are making money in CBD or marijuana, I feel like they have a responsibility to help build the other sides of the industry, because as we know, it's just one plant, right? We're all in this together and it's got a lot to offer for everyone. And as an example of that, I met a man, he's from Poland. His name is Maciej Kowalski. Mm-hmm. His company is called Kombinat Konopny, and it's a fiber company. It's like a vertically integrated from farm to finished products. He's making textiles, things like that, really nice hats. But he got his start in Poland as a CBD company, right? Mm-hmm. And he had early success, and his company was bought by a Canadian company, and he made some good money from it. But there was a non-compete clause, so he couldn't go back into CBD. But he's like, no, all right, well, good. I'm going to take that money, and he invested in fiber. And that's such an inspiring story. And he's great. I don't know if you've ever talked to him or
not yet. I'm going to reach out to him though for sure.
Yeah, he's great. I saw him talk at NOCO this year and just super inspiring, a little controversial. He was talking about, there's this concept of dual cropping, right? Where like, oh, I'm going to grow fiber and grain. And he's just like, no, that's not going to, you're not going to do that. You're going to end up with two inferior products. Just focus on one. So interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you are going to do the dual crop, you're going to have two plots. You're not going to do it on the same harvest or the same plant. So you have one part of your farm for grain and one part for fiber. It's doable.
Right, but that's not dual cropping. Like they're talking about like one harvesting plant. Two things from one plant.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can still harvest the stalks from the grain plants. That's what they do in Montana, mm-hmm. but you're not getting, you know, like textile quality fibers from it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, cool. I just have two other final questions, and the first one is, can you think of a memorable story, just something really fascinating, maybe someone you interviewed or that you learned about in the industry while covering different topics? Like, obviously, this was a cool story you just shared about Maciej Kowalski.
Maciej
Kowalski. But any other cool stories like that you can share? Oh, maybe somebody that really struggled and then was able to break through and have some success in the hemp world? Even just an inspirational story.
There's a lot of inspirational people. I'm inspired by Melissa Nelson Baldwin in South Bend, Kansas. Her and her husband and family, they put together a small decortication facility. They're growing hemp, and then they've got their neighbors growing hemp now, and they've sort of set up, you know, a supply chain, and they're selling stuff. The Elliott family in Fort Benton, Montana, this is Ken Elliott and his daughter, Morgan Tweet. What they're doing is so inspiring. And one of the things that I am inspired by is their dedication to promoting the industry and to teaching people and to bringing people together, that spirit of cooperation, like you said. They have been hosting an annual hemp summit in Montana. It's sort of like invitation only, but it's all fiber and grain. And it is really just like a good event, right? Like if you're interested in hemp fiber and grain business policy, all that stuff, it's a wonderful event. This will be their fourth year, and just as a side note, it started sort of because of me. I don't know, this feels weird just to say, but back in 2021 I went on a hemp tour. I'm not sure how I did it, but I convinced my company to rent an RV for me and my family, and we did 6 weeks on the road, hemp stops, you know, from sea to shining sea and there and back again. But we were going to Fort Benton to see the IND hemp facility. And Ken was like, he's like, hey, Eric's coming here. We got to like do something for him. We got to throw a party or something. Yeah. So they put on this summit and it was small, you know, like, and there might've been like 50 people there, but people from all over the industry, and they got together and they talked about stuff and they brainstormed like what needs to happen for fiber, what needs to happen for food, and then to see it progress from there. You know, back in 22, I went back. Last year I was there, and it's gotten progressively just more focused, and I don't want to say professional, but, you know, it started off pretty like grassroots. You know, we were just like at the community center in Fort Benton, and now it's at like a convention center. So that's been pretty inspiring to see, and it's neat to know that I had a little part in it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. So the last question I always love asking my interviewees is, if you were standing in front of a podium that was literally in front of the entire population of the planet, and you had 30 seconds to share a message about hemp, what would you want them to know?
Oh, wow. Hopefully, if this were actually happening, I would have more time to prepare my message. But off the cuff. Oh, what would I want the world to know about hemp? That it's a very elegant solution to a lot of our most challenging problems.
Mm-hmm.
That was less than 30 seconds.
Yeah. And then if you encourage them to take one action today as it relates to that vision, what would that one action be?
Wow. I feel like I would want them to write a letter to somebody, like at a company or something, or like, if we can get consumers giving a shit about how their stuff is made, right? Like if we could get people to think about every time you get some food and you peel off that plastic and you throw it away, like, couldn't that plastic film be made from plants? Yeah, it could be. So I guess I want people to think deliberately about their actions, about what they're doing and how they're consuming and the effect that is having on our world. And if you extrapolate, where's it going to go? Where is your behavior today? What's that going to look like in a few generations, right?
I love that. Not good. Yeah, that actually gives me a really good idea. Maybe what I can do is create a sort of template letter that people can download and customize it to send to either a representative in their state or, like you said, a business, a CEO, or someone that's responsible for materials acquisition for their businesses. That would be really helpful.
Right. Cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for tuning into another episode of HempAware Radio. If you want to make any suggestions on topics that you want us to cover, just reach out, support@hempaware.com. And if you're looking for help growing your hemp business and want some guidance on how to have a strategic marketing plan or brand strategy for your business, just reach out to us, hempaware.com, and we're happy to be of service. Thanks so much for tuning into another HempAware. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate you being here. How can people find you? Where can they follow you on the socials? What's the best way to get in touch with you if they want you to cover their topics on hemp?
Yeah, right. Definitely reach out. Email podcast@lancasterfarming.com. You can find us on your podcast app. Just search Hemp Lancaster Farming. It's got a hemp plant and a rainbow. You'll see us. Otherwise, lancasterfarming.com. Thank you so much, Tyler. It's great to talk to you. Appreciate your questions.
Thanks, buddy.